Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. In that particular battle space, a man who has both rendered service in government and out mightily in shaping and helping us understand and, I think, doing a lot to help us prevail in that war for the free world is our first guest. He is William Crystal, the editor of the Weekly Standard these days, a man you see frequently on Fox News and elsewhere. He is also an accomplished public servant, having served most recently as chief of staff to then Vice President Dan Quayle in the Bush administration and as chief of staff to William Bennett in the Department of Education under President Reagan. Bill, it's great to have you with us. Thank you very much for taking some time to talk about, the battle space of the war for the free world.
Great to be with you, Frank.
Bill, you've just written recently with Michael Makovsky at the Weekly Standard a very interesting and I think timely piece about what you call the Obama complex as it relates to the president's conduct, most immediately with respect to Iran. This raises a question about the character of that conduct, whether it's sheer incompetence or whether there's malevolence at work here. And I'd be interested in both your sense as to what's the manifestation of the complex and what your answer is to that question.
Psychology is not my expertise, and it's always hard to know what motivates people. I think malevolence is too strong in the sense that I think Obama may have a sincerely held view that we've thrown our weight around too much, that he certainly has a view, he said this a million times, that his job is to get us out of wars, not to start them, that he seems to have put less emphasis on the importance of hard power and military strength than previous presidents, I would say previous presidents of both parties. So, you know, I think he has a worldview. I think there's also a certain amount of just incompetence. I mean, the Syria thing, which is such a disaster to announce a red line and then back off, it didn't serve him well, I don't think. And I think we're now having a sort of collapse of credibility in the U.S. and in him personally around the world, and that's going to manifest itself on his watch. So it's a very worrisome situation. They try to dress it up with this claim that, as Obama said in an interview, that I'm comfortable with complexity. I was amused by that, as if people who say they're comfortable with complexity aren't really comfortable with real complexity. They use it as a kind of excuse to avoid facing problems, in my opinion, and I was reminded, and I wrote this, of Reagan's comment that there aren't easy answers, but there are sometimes pretty simple answers. And certainly being strong rather than weak, you know, not putting down red lines that you're not going to uphold, standing by your allies and being tough with your enemies. I mean, these are not excessively complex thoughts, but they are pretty good guides to foreign policy.
Bill, I guess what I'm getting at with the idea of malevolence, and maybe that is too strong a term, if you believe that the United States needs to be fundamentally transformed, including with respect to its role in the world, and you are determined to reduce that role in the world, the effect may be quite malevolent if it makes the world a more dangerous place, as I think you would certainly agree it does. Talk about this in the context of Iran specifically and the concerns that you've expressed, among others, of course, about where we've gotten to with this notion that it's a complex problem and will behave in a rather supine manner, I think, in the face of the complexity and certainly the ambitions of Iran.
With Obama, there seems to be a mix of probably a wish to sort of see the U.S. be less prominent, less shaping of a world order, and also just a kind of resigned resignation, a kind of sense of inevitability that it can't be done anymore. That he shares with an awful lot of respectable or quasi-respectable, pseudo-respectable foreign policy experts who all think, you know, in this modern world, you can't just throw your weight around the way, allegedly, we used to. So it's hard to know, honestly, how much of it's resignation, how much of it is sort of wishful thinking, how much of it is an actual desire to see a certain kind of vision implemented. And in some ways, it doesn't matter, since, as you say, the consequences are what the consequences are, right? And I do think Iran is the threat, really. And there are a lot of bad things happening in the world, but I think most of them are sort of manageable and reversible in terms of the bad trends. I mean, not reversible in the sense that, you know, 150,000 people are dead in Syria and so forth, but in the sense that fundamentally one can imagine a Reagan coming in and undoing the damage that's been done by a weak administration that precedes it. But Iran going nuclear just strikes me as sort of a qualitatively different problem. If that happens, it's very, you know, you can elect the best president possible in 2017. It's hard to know what he's going to do to undo that, which is why I and the Weekly Standard have been so focused on trying to stop that from happening, and why it's so unfortunate that the Obama administration has signed on to this, not just signed on to, but really encouraged and is responsible for this terrible deal in Geneva, which is now allowing the Iranians to buy time without dismantling any of their nuclear program and dismantling the sanctions regime. I think that's going to be awfully hard to put back together once there's 6 months of erosion. So I think we're on a very bad path in a lot of parts of the world, but the Iran path strikes me as really dangerous, and I hope Congress will step up and at least, you know, it's hard to stop a president, hard to improve a president's foreign policy, but sometimes Congress can at least stop it from getting worse.
And speaking of the 6 months, as you know, Bill Kristol, Catherine Ashton, the so-called European Union foreign minister, has stated openly what I think we've all been expecting, which is, well, it's not really just 6 months. It's 6 months unless we need more time, and if we need more time, we'll take more time. And Bill Kristol, let me just ask you about another manifestation of this attitude on the part of the Obama administration. I think you were following close the Munich conference on security over the weekend, in which the Secretary of State and the Secretary of Defense did a kind of pas de deux with these assorted folks, including the Iranians, and apparently delivered a message of how we're really hoping there'll be more opportunities to lead from behind as others, notably Europeans, step up to play a more prominent role in world affairs. Is this of a piece with the syndrome that you've just described, or is there a sort of worsening of it at a moment when American power is clearly waning?
I mean, it is ridiculous for them to sort of reiterate this as if this is working, but that's what happens in administrations. I guess you've sort of made your bed, and you're in a bit of a cocoon, and you don't really see a way out of it, and you're not willing to really rethink. I mean, Carter, for all that we don't think he was a good president, obviously. You came to Washington, I think, and were working against many of his initiatives, and correctly so. Nonetheless, he did, in fact, at some point acknowledge that he'd been bugged by reality, and in late 79, especially in 80, he did propose increases in the defense budget and did various other things that were at least showed a kind of pivot. I mean, you see, one sees none of that with Obama or his team. I mean, Kerry's maniacal insistence on a peace process in the Middle East when tens of thousands of people are being killed next door, and when everything is spinning out of control, basically in every country around in Israel and the West Bank is actually the quietest place in the region, you know, and he's obsessed with disrupting that, actually. And also, I mean, the whole thing is you sort of look at one thing and you can't believe it, and then you look at the next administration policy of the next country and you can't believe it. Another problem, and you and I discussed this, though, is, well, you were here, I think I wasn't in the late 70s, I was following it as a, you know, young grad student, assistant professor. There were people in Congress then who really fought back hard, and it was important. I think when historians write, I guess they have written, the history of that period, it's not just Reagan magically coming on the scene on January 20th, 1981, though that was obviously decisive. It was Scoop Jackson and John Tower and others in Congress being willing to fight hard on weapon systems, on strategic arms treaties, on other issues, Reagan fighting the Panama Canal, even, which in a certain way was less strategically important, but was very important to mobilize public opinion in 77, 78, and then SALT and the bomber. You remember this stuff much better than I do. It's really what's one worrisome thing. There are good people in Congress now, good senators, good congressmen, but there isn't the kind of real sustained leadership, certainly not from Democrats, who I think have been unwilling to cross Obama in a way that Scoop Jackson was not unwilling to cross Carter, but also from Republicans who have been willing to say they don't agree with Obama, but aren't willing to really make it a priority in terms of, you know, legislation and mobilizing public focus. And I think that's another problem. We're all doing our best on the outside, but you do need elected officials to really step up.
Bill, what would you say to Republicans most especially about the need for them to be a loyal opposition actively engaged on these national security disasters in the making?
I'd say two things. One, it's the right thing to do for the country because President Obama will be president, and I suppose Secretary Kerry and Secretary Hagel and these folks will be in office for the next 3 years. So you really need to, especially in foreign policy, stop the erosion, because you just can't recover from a lot of it. And secondly, I think from a political point of view, foreign policy will be a big issue in 2016, and the groundwork needs to be laid so a Republican candidate can do a better job than Mitt Romney did in 2012 of making foreign policy and defense policy central to the case why against a third term for the Democrats.
I couldn't agree more, and I think it actually has to start in 2014 if that groundwork is to be properly laid, as you say. Bill Kristol, we look forward to working with you on that and hopefully continuing this conversation with you in the days ahead. Thank you very much for joining us and for the terrific work you do at the Weekly Standard and Fox and elsewhere. It's great to have you with us, and we appreciate your time. Next up, combat veteran Amber Barno joins us to talk about the latest in the Obama administration's wrecking operation against the only military we have. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At America'sMightyWarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families,
including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events to let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
If you don't know where Bill Bennett stands, here are some of his beliefs.
I believe Americans should largely do much more for themselves than many Americans are doing.
But do I rule out government as something that might be able to assist in that? And that I do not.
I do think families, churches, and schools are better places for that to happen. People should do for themselves what they can. Government should do what people cannot do for themselves.
Get to know Bill Bennett, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined, I'm very pleased to say, by former Chief Warrant Officer 2 in the United States Army, Amber Barno. She served with great distinction in the Kiowa Warrior helicopter, which she piloted for almost 8 years in Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan. She is risen through her service to earn the rank of or title of pilot in command and air mission commander, real distinctions in the service. And we're very appreciative of that service. Amber, you've gone on to other things, including now as an advisor to a terrific organization, Concerned Veterans for America, and in other outlets commenting on the sorts of things that you've learned and experienced in service. And we're very appreciative of you being with us to talk a bit about all that. Welcome.
Thanks, Frank. It's great to be back on the show.
Let's talk a little bit about, well, what I think of as a wrecking operation that I think the Obama administration is running against our military, the only military we have, needless to say. You have been in the midst of the debate about the advisability of cutting the pensions that have been promised to younger retirees, and making the point that this could have a very untoward effect, not obviously just on them, but on morale and perhaps the condition of the military itself.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And what we've heard time and time again is the promise to our military from the time people signed on the dotted line to serve in the military. It's breaking the promise that they were guaranteed, because this isn't an entitlement. This isn't something that's given to them with nothing in return. This is a earned retirement.
Right.
And so when you start taking away these critical elements to some benefits that come along with serving your nation for over 20 years, when you start stripping those away after it's been promised to them, where are the incentives? Sooner or later, people aren't going to want to sign up for an all-volunteer military.
Amber Barno is our guest from, among other places, Concerned Veterans of America. I wanted to just get a sense from you as to, you obviously have people that you've served with who are still in uniform. Do you sense that this is having this cutting of promised benefits, earned benefits, already an impact on retention and the willingness perhaps of others to sign up in the first place?
It is, and it's especially discouraging during a time of war when people have other very important things on their mind, deployment, family, everything that goes along with living a military lifestyle. It's disheartening to them that they are basically getting their backs turned on them and the dysfunction, and I guess they're having to see the bureaucracy side of a government organization. So yes, it will have lasting and long-term effects on our military, I think, for time to come.
Another place, and I just have to say how much I appreciate your, well, candor and courage in talking about some of these things. I'm sure that there is a considerable pressure on you not to do so. But another place that I think is likely to be a wrecking ball in the military is what you've called a double standard for women in the military. Talk a little bit about how that is manifesting itself at the moment and what the implications of it might be for the good order and discipline and recruitment and retention and so on of our all-volunteer force.
So we're seeing more and more social engineering, social pressure being placed on the military, and which is fine. It's 2014. I was a woman served in combat in the military. There is an absolute need and place for women in the military. But what I have a serious problem with is this double standard where we're going to open all jobs to women, all positions, but you're going to give them special different requirements in order to meet the standard to be there.
You're talking here specifically about, I guess, ground combat units that these kinds of issues of strength, upper body strength particularly, can be the difference between life and death, not only for the individual involved, but for their comrades as well.
Exactly. Infantry, special operations, those types of jobs that may require a higher physical standard to meet the mission standard. And that's my big thing, is there should be a mission standard, not a gender standard. And what's a little discouraging is that the military, and obviously there's pressure from the administration and outside sources to ensure gender success. Well, that is not beneficial to mission success, and that is where the priorities should lie. We need to remember the sole purpose of our military. They're the operational side of our national security. They are we seek out, find, destroy the enemy. There's no sugarcoating it. The military is not a democracy. It has a rank structure and a chain of command. And the reason is the DOD, the military, it's a government agency, just like any other bureaucracy out there. But it is efficient because they are allowed to operate in certain ways, that just like with the rank structure and the chain of command that I mentioned.
Yeah, mission directed. And when it deviates from that, things get foobar pretty quickly, doesn't it? Amber
exactly.
Barno is our guest, a former chief warrant officer with a remarkable record as a command pilot in the Kiowa helicopters. Lastly, let me just quickly ask you, Amber, for your sense. And again, I know it's based not only on your own personal experience, but your contacts, continuing contacts with former comrades. How do the men and women in uniform today feel they are being treated when it comes to providing for their mission performance by investing in their training, by investing in maintaining the gear that they've currently got, and most especially investing in the gear that they're going to need to perform these missions in the future if they're to survive and prevail on the battlefields of tomorrow?
Well, I still have a lot of friends who are active duty and are currently deployed and will deploy, and they feel a sense of uncertainty and a sort of unfairness, because since 2001, when our nation has essentially been at war, they've sacrificed a lot. There's, you know, a saying, the military is not a job, it's a lifestyle, and that's absolutely the way it is. So when they feel the effects of sequestration, and a lot of higher-up brass will say, you know, that the operational people on the ground aren't actually feeling any of that, that's not true. Training is affected. That means they're not getting flight hours. They're not getting bullets for the range. Government shutdowns. They're not having the federal workers and the contractors out there running these facilities so our military men and women can get the training that they need to deploy.
And Amber, very, very quickly, just we've only got half a minute left, but very quickly, as a pilot, just how important is it to your ability to do your job safely and successfully if you haven't received the hours in the cockpit that you need to maintain your proficiency?
Yeah, you're exactly right. You suffer. Your crew will suffer. It's repetition. It's repetitive flight hours. You need that training time in order to successfully accomplish your mission during combat and on deployment.
And as I understand it, there are certain regs that are in place that I think have good reason behind them, of course, that if you haven't maintained your proficiency, you actually have to go back to school to get requalified. And that really means a tremendous impact in terms of the readiness of the force for some period of time. Amber Barno, there's so much more to talk about. I hope that you'll come back to us again very soon. We, as I say, appreciate what you're doing with, among others, Concerned Veterans for America, and in your writings and commentary. Keep it up. It is a contribution to the country's security that builds upon your very considerable contribution in uniform. We're very grateful to you.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
On August 2nd, 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
Debbie Lee became a Gold Star mom that day.
And it started a lifelong mission of her own. In Mark's honor, Debbie founded America's Mighty Warriors.
Dedicated to supporting the troops and their families.
AMW educates the public through speaking engagements, rallies, and events to raise awareness and appreciation of our military.
AMW advocates for the troops.
Funding, rules of engagement, benefits. AMW is committed to being a voice for justice for our troops. AMW serves Gold Star families. Retreats, concerts, special events.
Good things to remind the families they're not forgotten.
America's Mighty Warriors.
Nonprofit.
Dedicated to the troops and their families.
Donations are tax deductible.
Log on to americasmightywarriors.org.
Find out how you can help.
The best of America deserves our best. Log on today.
americasmightywarriors.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. If you thought Obamacare couldn't get any more screwed up, there's this news. According to the Washington Free Beacon's ace national security correspondent Bill Gertz, the Obama administration has been warned by U.S. intelligence that some of the software used at healthcare.gov was developed in Belarus. Now, Belarus is a client of an increasingly hostile Kremlin under Vladimir Putin. It's engaged in cyber operations that may have compromised internet traffic. If Belarus has gained access to Americans' personal information, forget about your privacy. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Mike Rogers is right to call for an independent damage assessment. A U.S. administration that has lied about its health care initiative from the get-go cannot be relied upon now to tell us the truth about its latest potentially devastating security breach. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We're joined, as we have the privilege of being from time to time, by Matt Cottinetti. He is the editor-in-chief of the Washington Free Beacon, a resource we find absolutely indispensable here at Secure Freedom Radio, I think, and many others do in Washington and beyond as well. Before joining the Beacon, he was an opinion editor at the Weekly Standard and is continuing there as a contributing editor. He's the author of several very interesting and important books, The K Street Gang, The Rise and Fall of the Republican Machine, and The Persecution of Sarah Palin, How the Elite Media Tried to Bring Down a Rising Star. Matt, welcome back. It's good to have you with us.
I'm glad to be here, Frank.
You've been writing on several topics that are considerable interest. So let's see how many of them we can cover here in the space of a short interview with you, Matt, starting perhaps with one that you addressed basically what Barack Obama is doing and put it into a context which I think is very useful to our understanding of the implications. You cast it as imagining what the world will look like in 2017, assuming that is the end point for this Obama's tenure. What troubles you about looking forward, what it's likely to be like, and what do you think it might mean for our security as well as, well, maybe our national existence?
Well, I think that the world that is coming into being, Frank, is a world that really resembles the world before the September 11 attacks. You know, it's a world where America downplays the threat of Islamic terrorism, mainly treating it as a matter of criminal justice. It's a world where, you know, America won't be in Iraq, America won't be in Afghanistan. And America just in general will be, you know, we called it the peace dividend in the 1990s, but of course there is no peace now, but we're still, cutting our defenses and our defense budget and our troop strength. And the problem though is not only will the world in 2017 look similar to the world in 2001, but it will be in some sense even more dangerous because you have the high possibility that Iran will have nuclear weapons capability at that time. And you also have, if you look at in East Asia, China is, I think, taking cues from the inaction of the United States, but is continuing its arms buildup and becoming much more belligerent towards its neighbors, including, you know, a great power, Japan. So this is the powder keg that Obama has been building for us. And to me, sadly, it's just only the question is when it goes off.
I guess it's a 2001 pre-9/11 world on steroids in a way, because as you say, our own capabilities and standing in that world has been much diminished. And I guess, Matt, I just want to assess this with you. I've been talking with a number of our guests about it in recent weeks. Is this incompetence in your judgment, or is it something purposeful? I've used the term malevolent. Maybe that's not the right word. Transformative, for sure, that is likely to produce, well, an explosion, as you've put it, at the very least, a rendering of America incapable to deal with these dangers in a way that, as I say, could pose a mortal peril to many of us.
Well, I think it's purposeful to insofar as Obama's policy from the very beginning has been to get America out of the Middle East. I mean, he campaigned as an anti-war candidate in 2008. He was against the war in Iraq. He said that Afghanistan was the good war at that time, but as we've learned from Bob Gates, you know, very soon after his election, he decided that, you know, Afghanistan really wasn't the good war, and in fact, that war needed to end as well. I mean, we see with, his policy from the very beginning has been to force an accommodation between Israel and the Palestinians, and that has led to very tough relations with one of our most important allies, and certainly hasn't gotten us anywhere except a continual forcing of concessions from the Israelis, including the release of these prisoners, these murderers who were released by Israel and with nothing in return from the Palestinians. So he had a sentence in his State of the Union address just this past week where he said, you know, we needed to get America off this permanent war footing. And that assumes that, well, one, we're on a permanent war footing, which America, arguably, to my mind, has not had much of been on a war footing since 9/11. I mean, we haven't reimposed a draft. We haven't asked the American people to sacrifice. You know, there's no scrap tin drives like you had during World War II during this age of holy terror. And two, that somehow his statement assumed that it was our decision to get off the permanent war footing. not remembering that, you know, as they say, as the cliche goes, the enemy gets a vote as well. So I would say it is purposeful. This is his worldview, and he is the president of the United States. And now with Chuck Hagel and John Kerry there, people who agree with him in every particular, he has put his worldview into action, and it's very disturbing to me.
Disturbing and, I think, dangerous as well. Let me talk about something that you've written about in fact, it was kind of the setup of your piece entitled The Big Chide at the Free Beacon last week. Matt Cottinetti, you have the headline from the New York Times: the U.S. chides Syria on missed chemical arms deadlines. And this, of course, refers to the fact that a trivially small percentage of the amount of chemical weapons that Syria was supposed to turn over to international management has actually been turned over, having bought the Syrians time and so on. What's your point about the role that the United States seems now to be relegated to of scolding, really, rather than directing these sorts of international events?
Well, again, this is Obama has said, remember, I mean, just what, 5 months ago, we were ready to rain hellfire upon Bashar al-Assad for using chemical,
well, at least
arms.
A little tiny bit of it, according to John.
Yeah, right, exactly. A pin, you know,
amazingly small amount.
Amazingly small, you know. But and then Obama reversed himself without telling his Secretary of State and seized on this proposal by the Russians that somehow, you know, the whole matter will be solved if Assad agreed to hand over his chemical arms. And that's how Obama says to the editor of the New Yorker the other week, you know, I averted another Middle East war with massive troop deployments, having been on the record as comparing, you know, likening Assad to Hitler. But you know, his paramount objective is to not have Americans in the Middle East. And so, some of us at the time were saying, well, the end result of his policy will be that Assad will remain in power and he'll have his weapons because you can't trust someone like Assad. And what do you know? All the deadlines have been blown by the Syrians. He's only given up less than 5%, but I think it's like 4.7% of his weapon stockpiles. And the supposed,
and those are the declared stockpiles, of course.
That's the declared ones, exactly. And then the supposed peace process that's happening in Geneva, they can't even, you know, there's not even a question of whether they'll have a second round of talks because the Syrian government won't even entertain the possibility of a post-Assad Syria. So again, we cling to this illusion on the part of Obama and his staff and his allies in the press that the whole world will be okay as long as we're talking to the bad guys, and that runs through everything. And we see time and time again that it talking does nothing. It doesn't solve the issue at hand, and in fact, what it does is it ties America's hands because you're left. You force yourself into a position where all you can do, all you want to do, when something, a clear violation of an agreement, and as we see with Assad, all the United States can do is chide him and say, well, we're so very disappointed. I just don't think that's how a superpower.
One of my disappointments is that we are out of time, Matt Cottinetti. It's always a delight to talk with you, and there's so much more to discuss, and I hope we'll have a chance to do so soon. I really wanted to just say you called it an illusion. I'm afraid it may be a delusion rather than an illusion, and one that is being afflicted upon the American people. That's where this national security fraud piece comes in. I think you're right. It is purposeful. It is not incompetence or accidental. More on this on another occasion soon, I hope. Matt Cottinetti, thank you so much for joining us. And next up, Ambassador Henry Cooper joins us to talk about the fact that even the LA Times now understands the EMP threat. Will Congress? Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them,
when you make fun of them,
when you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around. And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
This is Frank Gaffney. Something is seriously wrong when the FBI interviews a jihadist like Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the older of the two Chechens believed to have perpetrated the bombing of the Boston Marathon, and sees no evil. Yet, that is the predictable result of the shackling of the Bureau that has taken place in recent years. For example, in 2011, the Obama administration actually purged FBI training materials of information that warns of the connection between the Tsarnaev's kind of religious fervor and terrifying acts of jihad. And Team Obama has also effectively told the Bureau it must get the approval of Muslim Brotherhood operatives before it can do any such training in the future. This is a formula for much more jihad in America. It's time to free the FBI so that they can do their job and protect our country. If you agree, go to www.freethefbi.com. That's www.freethefbi.com.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined by Dr. Henry Cooper, also known as Ambassador Henry Cooper, or Hank to his friends, and I consider myself among them. I had the privilege of serving many years ago in the Reagan administration when Hank Cooper served in several different incarnations, perhaps the most prominent among them, as Ambassador to the Defense and Space Talks from the United States in the bilateral negotiations underway at the time with the Soviet Union. He is a man who's got
got extensive expertise, truly a rocket scientist, in matters involving national security, space, ballistic missile defense, and the like. This has made him the obvious person to be the chairman of an extraordinarily important organization, High Frontier, founded by the late General Danny Graham. And that work continues now under Hank's great leadership. Hank, it's great to have you back with us. I think this is the first time in the new year, so Happy New Year to you. Welcome back.
Happy New Year to you, Frank. I'm pleased to be with you.
Listen, there's some developments that are very much in the focus of High Frontier and many of us who are working with you in the EMP coalition, the Electromagnetic Pulse Coalition. In fact, there was a front page story in the LA Times, of all places, over the weekend, Sunday, that talked about, quote, concern grows over the possibility of a massive power surge. And the subtitle is Weather Caused by Solar Flares or Terrorists. A major electromagnetic pulse could fry the electric grid and cause massive disruption, an increasing number of observers say, unquote. This is not news to you, Henry Cooper. Needless to say, you've been working for decades on these issues. But what do you take from the fact that even the Los Angeles Times, of all places, is now giving this the kind of front page attention, well, that I think we both agree it deserves?
Well, I absolutely agree. I look forward to reading the article, but I'm pleased that the Los Angeles Times is joining the fray, so to speak, and recognizing this terribly important threat that those of us who have worked on strategic issues have understood to be a serious threat since the early 1960s. And regrettably, we've done nothing to harden our critical infrastructure, most notably the electric power grid, to deal with it. And I think the New York Times had a special multi-page article last summer sometime on it as well. And so I'm really pleased to hear some of the press that's not noted as us vast right-wing conspirators, taking this issue seriously.
And Hank, you, as you mentioned, have been spending your extraordinary professional career on matters like strategic forces and the kinds of deterrence of attack against this country and defeating such attacks, should that be necessary, with missile defenses. This is not a new phenomenon, as you say, to those like you. It's been largely treated as a classified problem for a long time. But talk a little bit, if you would, about the knowledge that folks like yourself in the Air Force in the past have had about what's necessary to harden things that could be directly relevant to protecting the grid against solar or man-caused devastation.
Well, as you said, Frank, we discovered the significance of this threat on a nuclear test in 1962, which had dramatic effects 900 miles away in Hawaii. The test was in the South Pacific. And we learned then the damage that could be caused because it shut down, I think it was 7 of our satellites, a brand new capability that we were deploying, as well as doing damage to some of the facilities in Hawaii. So the military undertook a major program to harden our strategic system, our ICBMs and submarine-launched ballistic missiles and the command and control for them and our strategic bombers so that the president, if we were attacked, could order a retaliatory strike. But we did nothing to harden the civil critical infrastructure, most notably the electric power grid. And, of course, the electronics today is much more vulnerable to this effect than they were in 1962. The vacuum tube electronics had some inherent hardness. And today we are very susceptible because of the solid-state electronics that everything, including your automobile and communications and banking and medical and everything else, depends upon. So the loss of all that, because it's not hardened, would really be dramatic. We know how to deal with this issue. As I said, we dealt with it for many years, and it was classified until the mid-2000s. And a major commission, an EMP commission appointed by Congress with no axe to grind other than to clarify what the issues are, were able to persuade the powers that be to down-classify or make open source much of that material, which is available in the open now. You can, among other places, you probably have it on your web page. We have it on ours.
StopEMP.org is one place people can turn to. Hank, let me ask you about one particular piece of this that I know you've been very focused on. You, of course, in your extensive government career, also served as the director of the Strategic Defense Initiative Organization, or SDIO, the missile defense development, testing, and ultimately deployment program that President Reagan initiated. You have been worrying, as have many of us, about a threat of developing or delivering, I should say, this electromagnetic pulse attack against this country via a ship in the Gulf of Mexico, perhaps, or Caribbean. Talk a little bit about what that might entail, who could do that to us, and what kinds of defensive capabilities we have in place today to prevent it.
To begin with, we have no defense in place today to defend against a missile launch from ships off our coast, especially from the Gulf of Mexico or from Venezuela, a point south. And this is a capability that is well known to our adversaries. We believe, or we observed, is a better way of saying it, Iran testing and from the Caspian Sea this kind of capability over a decade ago. So the Iranians well understand this, and either they or their terrorist surrogates could smuggle a missile into the Gulf of Mexico and fire it up into the above the atmosphere, maybe a couple of hundred miles up or 100 miles up, and create this problem over the entire United States. And today we can't defend against it at all. We could if we would just deploy the kinds of systems that we're building in Romania and Poland to protect the Europeans against missiles launched from Iran, and we should do the same thing for the American people.
And without getting too technical about it, where do those missiles currently reside, if I can use that expression, and how confident are we that they would work in this kind of threat environment?
They're on board some 34, I believe it is now, 32 to 34 Aegis ships at sea. And what I'm talking about is taking the interceptors that, in my judgment, are the best capability we have deployed today, the launch systems, the command and control system, and the radar from off a ship and put it on an area of approximately, well, even less than the size of a football field, on a military base. Tyndall Air Force Base is one of the prime ones I would choose in the Panama City area of the panhandle of Florida to provide this protection somewhere between.
Against the missiles that, for example, we found in the hold of a North Korean vessel intercepted in Panama. This is not a leap of imagination by any means. Hank Cooper, your clarity on these issues over a very long period of time has been deeply appreciated by me, and I think all of us who love this country, and we salute you for your work at the high frontier and all that you do for the EMP Coalition and so much more. Keep it up and keep coming back to us, if you would, with progress on what you're getting done in terms of trying to put some of these protective measures in place. In the meantime, I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.